ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं चैव ततो जयमुदीरयेत्. Very good. Welcome back. Good. Today we start a new section of the Mahabharata. We continue in the Aranyaka Parva, the Vana Parva, or Vana Parva also called. We're going to be in that Parva for a long time, because how long did the Pandavas spend in the forest? You get the idea. But there are some wonderful, wonderful teachings that are found in the Aranyaka Parva, including the sequence of three chapters, which is a dialogue between Draupadi and Yudhishthira. Remember, they're stuck in the forest for those 12, 13 years, so you can imagine there's going to be a lot of discussion, a lot of time for discussion, and discussions which sometimes get a little heated. Do discussions between spouses sometimes get a little heated? You bet. Well, here we go. So, and the topic of discussion, you don't, by the way, you don't get into heated discussions about trivial matters. You get into heated discussions about really important matters. And that's what we're going to see starting now, a discussion about karma and free will. This is one of the topics that's always debated widely by spiritual seekers. What is it that determines the nature of your life? Is it your karma, the karmas you're born with, or is it your free will, the effort that you make throughout your life? A subject of much debate. We can observe that if you look at traditional Vedantic texts on Advaita Vedanta, you won't find this topic discussed anywhere. Why? Well, if you're studying a text on Vedanta, presumably it's because you want to go beyond what's possible in this world, right? Now, Vedanta is all about discovering your true nature as Satchidananda Atma, non-separate from Brahman, and that entire topic is not dealing with the nature of the world. When we talk about karma and free will, it's a topic about worldly life, is it not? It is. It's a topic about worldly life, and therefore it is a topic that is not taught in traditional texts on Advaita Vedanta, which is one of the reasons we're studying the Mahabharata, which in its vastness includes so many important topics. When I say that it's not taught by texts on Advaita Vedanta, it doesn't mean that it's not important. It simply means that it's not considered included in the teachings of Advaita Vedanta. So, it is important. It's not included in the teachings of Advaita Vedanta, most certainly included in the Mahabharata. Now, we need, before we begin this chapter, we need to introduce this subject matter properly, because if you study the Mahabharata, you'll find a variety of opinions expressed, especially on this topic, karma versus free will. What shapes your life? Does your prarabdha karma shape your life, the karmas that you're born with? According to Dhritarashtra, yes, your karmas that you're born with shape your life. According to Bhima, not at all. Your effort, your free will shapes your life. And you'll find in the pages of the Mahabharata, you'll find Dhritarashtra expressing his opinion. You'll find Bhima expressing his opposite opinion. leading us to the question of who's right? Is Dhritarashtra right? Dhritarashtra says the war is inevitable, there's nothing that can be done, we might as well just accept our fate, if he spoke in English. And Bhima would say that you always have the responsibility to use your effort, to use your power. He had considerable power. So you have to use your power to create the outcome that you want. And we find among other characters, we find all kinds of opinions, all kinds of teachings on karma and free will, all of which are contradictory to one another. So how can we reconcile all these apparently different teachings in the Mahabharata? And to explain that, I'd like to give a proper introduction, and it'll make it very clear. The answer to that question, of course, what is it that determines your future? Is it the karmas you're born with or the willful actions you do in this life? The answer to that question, of course, is yes. Meaning both. and a position that's often ignored. And to explain how both karma and free will simultaneously determine the outcome of events in your life, I'd like to share with you, I think, one of the most powerful and clear examples. It's called a drishtanta. Drishtanta is an example which will explain and clarify this topic. Some of you have heard this before. Usually when we study chapter 2 of the Bhagavad Gita, we go into the doctrine of karma at great length. So I'd like to return to that topic and with this particular metaphor, which some of you have seen. If you haven't seen it, you need to see this. This is, in my opinion, the most powerful and clear representation that shows how karma and free will simultaneously act on you in life. The metaphor is that of a river. This river is flowing from top to bottom. And you are standing on one shore of this river. Your goal is on the other side of the river. And you know how to swim. So, suppose you jump into the river and use your effort. So we're talking about two factors, right? Karma and effort. Effort we'll call prayatna. And for karma, in our study of chapter 2, when we discussed sanchita karma, agami karma, prarabdha karma, all of that, we made those distinctions. Those distinctions aren't very important right now. So we're going to use a different expression, talking about the karmas that affect you in this life. In the Mahabharata, a particular word is used to describe the karmas that affect us in this life. It's a word you know, but you may not have made this particular connection. And the word that's used is daiva. Daiva literally means of the gods. That which is controlled not by you, but by the gods or by God, Ishvara. That which is controlled by Ishvara is daiva. Now, what has that got to do with karma and free will? When we say Ishvara's control, tell me, you've all been attending these classes for a while, do you think Ishvara sits on some big throne? You call it Singhasana. He sits on his big throne in some loka, and he's looking down on all of us miserable little mortals. And he's deciding, who should I bless? Who should I curse? What should I do? What kind of, should I create an earthquake today? Should I make this person die of a heart attack? Should this person win a lottery? you're laughing, which is good, because that is such a silly and childish concept of Ishvara. Ishvara is not like some Raja, king, in some heavenly domain, passing his dictates on what will happen and what won't happen. Ishvara is the intelligence that pervades the cosmos. We really need to have a mature understanding of Ishvara before we even begin our discussion here of karma. Ishvara, to use modern terms, Ishvara is not a micromanager, right? Some of you are at a workplace and you know what a micromanager is. Ishvara, micromanager is someone who is so focused on all the details. Ishvara is not focused on the details. What did Ishvara do? He created the laws of the universe, and the universe functions according to Ishvara's laws. That's very different than looking at Ishvara as a willful individual. And here's a real problem many people have. You and I have free will. Does Ishvara have free will? Well, in principle, yes, because he's Ishvara, so he can't not have free will. But here's the problem. Ishvara is not like you and me. Thank goodness. What kind of world would we live in if Ishvara were like you and me? It would be a mess. Ishvara is not a human being, correct? Therefore, Ishvara's free will cannot be anything like human free will. Be clear about that. If we say Ishvara must have free will, because if he doesn't have free will, then he's controlled by somebody else. So we have to say Ishvara has free will, but it cannot be like your free will and my free will. Then what would be the nature of Ishvara's free will? The easiest answer to this is Ishvara's will is expressed in the laws of the cosmos. To say, and many of you have seen me demonstrate this before, we can say it is Ishvara's will that when I drop this pen, it falls. Really, that is so important. That is so clear. It is Ishvara's will. Not only that the pen falls, but did you learn in a science class? It doesn't just fall, it accelerates. It doesn't just accelerate, but it accelerates at exactly 9.8 meters per second per second. Not faster, not slower. Who decided that? Ishvara. So the best way of understanding Ishvara's will is not using your free will as a model. Because if you use your free will as a model, you drag Ishvara down to our level. That's not very praiseworthy, is it? So, if we really want to understand Ishvara's will, we understand Ishvara as the one whose will is manifest as the laws of nature, the physical laws of the universe, including the law of karma. Right? Law of karma is also law of the universe. What is the law of karma? You do a good action, you get a good result. You do a harmful action, you get an undesirable result. Those results come according to whose laws? Ishvara's laws. Those results come according to whose will? Ishvara's will. Ishvara's will, in the form of the laws of karma, determine that for your dharmic actions, you get desirable results. For your adharmic actions, you get undesirable results. Which is why, in Vedanta, we have an important expression we use for, we describe Ishvara as karma pala data. as the giver data. As the giver of the fruits of karma. Phala, the fruits. The giver of the results of karma is Ishvara. Ishvara as the karma phala data, as the giver of the fruits of action, he makes the universe go. So, just to illustrate it one last time, I commit an action of releasing the pen. Who gives me the result of this action? Ishvara. Ishvara is the giver of the result of this action. If I drop the pen, it's an action, it has a result. That result is karma phala. Who gives that result? Ishvara. Now, let's finish this up so we can go back to our diagram. Suppose I don't just drop the pen. Suppose I fling it at you and it hits you in the face. That is an adharmic action. For that adharmic action, I should receive an undesirable result. From whom? Ishvara. For my adharmic action of hurting you with this pen, I receive an undesirable result. We call this papa karma. Papa karma. If I commit a papa karma, a hurtful action, I receive the phala, the result of that papa karma, which is some undesirable result that will take place at some time in the future, either later in this life or if not in a future life. Similarly, if you need a pen, and I say, here, take this one, then I'm doing a punya karma, a good action, a dharmic action. And for that good action, I should receive a result. What is a result? A desirable result. And from whom do I receive that result? From Ishvara, the karma paladatta. Now, why have we gone off on all of that? It's to explain this word. This is the word used in the Mahabharata, not prarabdha karma. Someplace, I'm sure the term prarabdha karma is used in more of a Vedantic context, but in these three chapters, in his dialogue between Yudhishthira and Draupadi, daiva is the term that's used. And again, daiva means that which is coming from God. Prayatna, effort, is what you do. Daiva, that which comes from God, is what you don't do. It's what Ishvara does. But again, what Ishvara does he just do anything he feels like? Or does he give you the results of your actions? That's the point. Ishvara does not act randomly and spontaneously. Ishvara acts specifically to give us the fruits of the actions we ourselves have committed. That's what it means to call Ishvara the karma paladatta. So when we say that, instead of using the term prarabdha karma, which most of you have heard before here, we're going to start using the word daiva. So daiva means the results of your actions given by deva. Deva means God. Daiva means that which is of God. So the results of your actions given by God is called daiva. Again, literally daiva means of God. So now, with this in mind, we have this diagram that's going to explain the relationship between your karma, or the force that we'll call daiva, and your effort, the force that we'll call prayatna. So you jump in the river and you start swimming towards your desired goal. Swimming exactly in that direction. Where do you go? Somebody said down. You go down? You don't go down. You go at an angle, right? Any of you study math or science, you learn something about vector addition and dot products? That's what this stuff is. If you didn't have to study that, you're lucky. It's not that complicated. It requires some trigonometry, that's all. And not too bad. Anyway, but notice that where you end up is not the result purely of your effort. So this arrow represents your effort, prayatna. And the current obviously represents daiva. And notice where you end up depends on both. That's why they call it dot product. It's a product of both. So, this is our starting point. If we ask, what is it that determines the outcome of your life? Is it the karmas you're born with, or is it your effort? And the answer to that question is simply yes, they both do. Now, to come to our Mahabharata, we find characters like Dhritarashtra arguing vehemently that your effort counts for nothing. Everything is karma. Then you have other characters like Bhima arguing that who cares about karma? You try hard enough and you can do anything. So how do we reconcile these two positions with this understanding that both karma, both daiva and prayatna, both simultaneously determine the outcome? Now, there are two extreme possibilities in this diagram. So one extreme possibility is you come to this river in August. In India, in August, monsoon season, most of the rivers are just overflowing. They're raging torrents. So suppose you arrive in August, it's a raging torrent, and suppose you're a weak swimmer. The river is a raging torrent, and you know how to swim, but you're not very good at it. So you jump in the river, and you use your prayatna, your feeble effort, but your feeble effort counts for little in the face of the overwhelming currents during the monsoon seasons. In that situation, where do you go? Yeah. Right. Exactly so. Now, suppose this is one extreme position. What is the other extreme position? Suppose you come to the river in May. During the hot season, the river is very low. By the way, except for in the Himalayas, where the snow melts and it actually goes up. So anyway, don't worry about the details. Anyway, suppose you come to the river when the current is very weak. And suppose you're a very strong swimmer. Suppose you are a very strong swimmer in a weak current. Could you swim upstream? Yeah. If you're a strong swimmer and the current is weak, no problem. You could swim directly against the current. Both are possible. Notice these are the two extreme possibilities. One is the extreme strength of the current and weakness of you as a swimmer. And the other extreme is the extreme weakness of current and the strength of you as a swimmer. And it turns out, returning now to karma and prayatna, life is the same. There are times in life where our karmas are overpowering, and no matter how hard we try, in the face of overpowering daiva, to use the word, there are times in life where the daiva is overpowering, and all the effort in the world is not going to do anything. Suppose someone is dying of congestive heart failure. Congestive heart failure is the end stage in some forms of heart disease. And at that state, the doctors do everything they can, and the patient still eventually dies. Effort counts for little if the given situation, and let us presume that the congestive heart failure is the fulfillment of this person's karma. No reason that it shouldn't be. So suppose the person has congestive heart failure due to their karma, due to daiva, no amount of effort is going to make that person live another 10 years. 10 weeks, maybe. 10 years, no way. So that is one extreme position. And this would be the position taken by Dhritarashtra, who in his experience, he feels the power of karma is overwhelming, and he also has a character, he has a number of character flaws. One of his character flaws of Dhritarashtra, it's not our topic, we won't go into it in detail, but he is very weak-willed, extremely. If you go through the story, his will is extremely weak. Basically, whatever Duryodhana asks, he says, okay. Like some of you as parents, when your children would ask you, some of you, not all of you, some of you, whatever your parents, whatever your children ask, okay. But that's really, you know, if your child asks, you wouldn't do this. If your child asks to do something wrong, you won't say okay. Dhritarashtra did. Many times, Duryodhana proposed to do all kinds of wrong things. We saw a month ago, he wanted to conduct his dice game. Duryodhana told his father, Dhritarashtra, I want to conduct his dice game. Dhritarashtra knew absolutely well that it was a wrong thing to do. Yet, he said, okay, he gave permission. This is to illustrate that Dhritarashtra had weak will and very strong negative karmas. Weak will is like not being able to swim very strongly. And being overwhelmed by strong karmas is being overwhelmed by the current. So you can see clearly why Dhritarashtra took that position. That was his opinion, because that's what he experienced in his life. Being weak-willed and being overpowered by karma. On the other hand, we said the other possibility is the current is weak and you're a strong swimmer. Bhima is the example of someone who is strong. With his strength, he could overcome most karmas. Because he was so strong, he was so powerful. With the use of his power, his might, he could overcome many, but not all, karmas. And that gave him the opposite experience of Dhritarashtra. That led Bhima to conclude, if I can, you know, just as one who is a strong swimmer can swim against the current, Bhima concluded that, yes, there is karma affecting me in life, but I'm powerful enough, I can conquer. I can override that karma and do things anyway. Now you understand why different characters in the Mahabharata have different perspectives on the relationship between karma and effort, the relationship between daiva and prayatna. And we enter now into a discussion between Draupadi and Yudhishthira, and you'll find that Draupadi initially seems to have this very negative view, like Dhritarashtra. Initially, Draupadi seems to feel like effort counts for very little, the karmas are very strong. Yudhishthira, on the other hand, has a more balanced perspective. More balanced perspective means what affects you is both. By the way, just to finish our diagram here, if you jump into the river and experience current, does it mean you're incapable of reaching your destination? There is a current, but that current need not prevent you from reaching your destination. All you have to do is compensate for the current by swimming in this direction. Right? If you were to swim at this diagonal direction upwards, slightly into the current, you could exactly reach your destination. This is a balanced perspective. This would describe the perspective of Yudhishthira. And by the end of the discussion, you'll see that it's also Draupadi's bottom line. She starts off with this very negative perspective, but towards the end, you'll see that she also adopts the same balanced perspective as Yudhishthira. By the way, I'll just give you something to look forward to. There's a big surprise that comes at the very end of this three chapters. You'll find that Draupadi ends up teaching Yudhishthira about the doctrine of karma. What? How? What? Wait, this is one of the fun parts of studying the Mahabharata. You get all kinds of really interesting, unexpected things, and we will see that, but it comes towards the end, so we'll see that when we arrive there. With this rather, we needed this elaborate introduction. Now with this introduction, we are ready to begin. Chapter 31. Draupadyuvacha, Draupadyuvacha, Neha dharman rishaṁ syabhyam, Neha dharman rishaṁ sa, Nakshantya narjavena cha, Nakshantya narjavena, Purusha shriyam hapnoti, Purusha shriyam Nagrinitvena karhichata, Nagrinitvena karhichata. All right, look at the third line. Purusha, purushaha, a person. Shriyam, wealth, prosperity. Apnoti, gains. How does a person gain prosperity? Prosperity is the result of your effort, right? Prayatna. So if you do prayatna, you should get some prosperity. But notice what Draupadi observes. Na iha dharma anishamsyabhyam. Iha, here in this world. How do you obtain prosperity? Na, not by dharma and anishamsya. That abhyam is a typical dual ending. So she says, you don't gain prosperity by following dharma, you don't gain prosperity through anrishamsya, kindness, compassion. Na kshantya, you don't obtain prosperity by kshanti. We saw before kshanti was, different word. Kshanti, forgiveness, related to kshama, which we were talking about in our prior class. Kshama means forgiveness. Kshanti can also mean forgiveness. So you don't gain prosperity by following dharma. You don't gain prosperity through kindness. You don't gain prosperity, kshantya, through kshanti, through forgiveness. Nor do you gain prosperity, arjavena, through arjava, straightforwardness, being simple and honest. And finally, at the bottom, nor do you obtain prosperity grinhitvena by being afraid of someone who will censure you, fear of censure, we'll just translate it, through fear of making a mistake and being fear of criticism. There's a nice translation. Fear of criticism. So you don't gain prosperity in this way. Now, put it in context. How did Yudhishthira live? Did Yudhishthira follow dharma? Yep. Was he kind? Yep. Was he forgiving? That's what our prior chapter was about. He was very forgiving. Was he honest? Yep. So Yudhishthira did everything right, and they end up in the forest dressed in bark. And that's what she's, sorry, pun, that's what she's barking about. By the end of the chapter, she's really going to be angry. Just watch. She kind of builds up throughout this chapter, and by the end of the chapter, she's just shouting at Yudhishthira. You'll see that. So, not surprisingly, this is what Draupadi observes. She says, "Oh, Yudhishthira, you did everything right. We got nothing out of it. Here we are in a forest dressed in deer skin. How to explain that?" Well, let's go back to our... I think we'll just leave the sun, because we're going to come back here several times. So, what's going on? Yudhishthira is making effort. Fine. He's making the right effort. Of course, yeah, we'll just say, the prayatna is present. Absolutely present. Yudhishthira is making an effort to live a good life. Yudhishthira should receive the results of that good life. There's another factor, though. This daiva. Daiva means Ishvara giving you the results of your prior karmas. Prior karmas means not the results of the... Well, two kinds. This is more details of the doctrine of karma. We speak of two kinds of results. Drishtapala, adrishtapala. Do you remember these terms? Drishta and adrishtapala. Drishtapala, drishta literally means seen. Drishtapala are the seen results. Adrishtapala are the unseen results. And the doctrine of karma says, for every act, both kinds of karma take place. Let me illustrate. The one before, I've said, if I throw this pen and it hits you hard in the face, there are two results for me. One result for me is I no longer have a pen. That is the drishtapala. The immediate seen result for me is I no longer have a pen. But there's a second result. A result that takes place later. A deferred result. That's what we call adrishtapala. Deferred results. And we know that we are born according to the deferred results, the adrishtapalas from actions committed in prior lives. To go through all those details would require another one or two classes. We're going to leave that aside. We won't go into that detail here. Because our topic is really not the doctrine of karma. Our topic is karma versus effort. So, with that in mind, Ishvara is the karma pala data for both the drishtapala and the adrishtapala. But when we talk about daiva specifically is with regard to adrishtapala, right? That which comes from you is drishtapala. You are the author, you could say, you are the author of the drishtapala. You can even argue that you're not, but I don't want to get into that detail. And here, Ishvara is the author of the adrishtapala. So, with that in mind, Yudhishthira has done a lot of prayatna. He's done lots of good things. He's followed dharma. He's been kind. He's been forgiving. He's been honest. He's done so many good things, and he's gotten drishtapala for that. But what affects him in life is not only his effort, the force of daiva also affects him. Daiva is what's coming from the results of actions committed in prior lives, correct? This is what we understand according to the doctrine of karma. So it could be that he's making this effort to cross the river, but it could be that the current of the river is really, really strong. And if I were to indicate it here, how about an arrow like going in this direction? Mostly down. Not completely down. Mostly down. This is Yudhishthira. This is a Pandava's experience. They've been going in the right direction, doing all the right things, but the outcome has been very undesirable. They're all suffering a lot, and that is a result of this prayatna. One more factor we have to put in here. Watch this. If Yudhishthira is doing all these good karmas, why can't he get the result of those good karmas right now, in this life? It can happen. For example, if I take this pen and bonk you in the face with it, that's so I have both the drishtapala, I don't have the pen. The adrishtapala is at some point I will receive an undesirable result. Well, when will that undesirable result take place? We don't know. Could happen in the next life. Could happen immediately. Suppose you take the pen and fling it right back at me and it hits me. One way of understanding that would be the immediate manifestation of that karma. Tongue in cheek, some people call that instant karma, which means sometimes you don't have to wait. So here's Draupadi's argument. She doesn't get into all the technical details, but what she's suggesting is that all of the good actions that Yudhishthira has done in this life, shouldn't at least some of those good actions yield their results in this life? We don't know. There's no way of knowing. One thing we know is this. The adrishtapala, the unseen deferred results of your actions, take place sooner or later according to time, giving us a third factor. Oops. And what is that third factor? Time. Kala. Time is absolutely a factor in everything we do. Even if you're making effort, you jump in a river and you're swimming, suppose after 2 minutes you say, I haven't reached my destination yet. This isn't working. Well, wait a minute. Prayatna over time yields its result. Similarly, when you commit good karmas, those good karmas will affect you in the future. When? In time. Later in this life? Maybe not. Maybe in the next life. If you commit harmful actions in a prior life, when will those harmful actions yield their result? In time. How much time? We don't know. Who knows? Ishvara, the omniscient one, Sarvajna, the one who knows all according to Ishvara's laws, those results will fructify in time. So this creates then the third of the three factors. Daiva, I think the usual order is Daiva, Kala, Prayatna. Order doesn't make any difference. These three factors are quoted frequently in Vedanta texts. This isn't only for Mahabharata. This is true in all Vedantic texts. These three factors. So Kala is like implied by the laws of nature. the laws of nature through which your effort produces a result, the laws of nature through which you receive the results of your past actions at Daiva. So kala is implied, but it's called out as a specific factor. So these three factors, Daiva, kala, and prayatna, determine what's going to happen. And right here, Draupadi is not recognizing. She's not recognizing how Daiva works, and especially how kala is a factor. She's saying, Yudhishthira, you're doing all these good things, you're not seeing the results of them. Isn't that her argument? Look at all the good things that you've done in life, Yudhishthira. What do you have to show for it? And the answer, according to the doctrine here, is kala. In time, Yudhishthira will receive the results. Certainly, at the end of the, after the war, he wins the kingdom. His kingdom is restored to him. So in time, the results come. But at this point, Draupadi is, in fact, you're going to see throughout this chapter, she's so angry, she's not thinking clearly. You'll see that again and again. You know how that happens, right? We get so angry. She turns out, and we'll see this at the very end of this three-chapter section, that Draupadi is actually quite well-versed in everything we've just discussed. But at this point in time, she's so angry. She's like, she's not thinking clearly, so therefore she says to Yudhishthira, look, you've lived such a good life, and what do you have to show for it? If she spoke Hindi, she would say, Kutsnahi. She didn't speak Hindi. All right. Rajanam dharma goptaram, Rajanam dharma goptaram, dharmo rakshati rakshitaha, dharmo rakshata rakshitaha, iti me shrutam haryanam, iti me shrutam haryanam, tvam tu manyena rakshati, tvam tu manyena rakshati. Iti me, in the third line, iti me shrutam, thus have I heard, Aryanam, from the noble ones who have gone before. What have the noble ones taught? Dharmo rakshati rakshitaha, you've heard that. This is a very, very frequently quoted statement. It occurs several places in the Mahabharata. It occurs in other scriptures as well. What does it say? Dharma rakshitaha, when dharma is protected, dharma rakshitaha, rakshana is protection. When dharma is protected, protected means followed. When you follow dharma, then what? Rakshati, it protects you. I guess we have to stay with the translation protect. When you protect dharma, how do you protect dharma? By following dharma. When you protect dharma, rakshati, it will protect you. It'll protect others. When you dharma, when protected, protects. That's a literal translation of that second line. Dharma, when protected, protects. And who does it protect? It protects dharma goptaram. It protects the one who protects dharma. Gopta means one who protects. Here. Dharma gopta, one who protects dharma. So when dharma is protected, it protects the protector. Got it? So when you follow dharma, dharma will take care of you. Here, we're not talking about you, we're talking about Rajanam, a king. A king, like Yudhishthira, when a king, Rajanam, like Yudhishthira, is dharma goptaram, when a king is a protector of dharma, then what? Dharma rakshati. Then that dharma will protect him. Iti me shutam aryanam. Thus have I heard from our great saints and sages. But now she gets a little sarcastic here. Twam tu, but you, Yudhishthira, manye, I consider, narakshati, it doesn't protect. Which means, dharma, when protected, seems to benefit everyone else except for you, Yudhishthira, because you have lived a life of dharma, and what do we have to show for it? We are exiled to the forest, dressed in bark. So she is continuing to bark. She is still really upset. So she says a little sarcastically here, Yudhishthira, a great king who follows dharma is protected by the dharma that he protects, that seems to be a universal truth taught by all of our great sages and saints, but manye, I think, narakshati tvam. It doesn't protect you. This great teaching, this universal principle, somehow doesn't apply to you, Yudhishthira, because you, in spite of following dharma, you have been robbed of the benefit of following dharma. Has Yudhishthira really been robbed? We just discussed in a prior verse. He hasn't been robbed of the result of his effort, but it'll come later. It'll come in time with Kala. So he hasn't been robbed, but he has yet to receive the benefit of the dharmic life that he has led so far. And Draupadi, due to her anger, is not thinking about that. So she just looks at her situation in the forest and she's angry. And she continues. Whole chapter. She really goes for it. Rajan paritaya buddhya. Rajan paritaya buddhya. Vishamiksha parajaye. Vishamiksha parajaye. Rajam vasunyayudhani. Rajam vasunyayu. Bhratran mam chasi nirjataha. Bhratran mam chasi nirjataha. Rajan, O king. Asi, and look at the end. Asi nirjataha. You were conquered. Asi nirjataha. You were conquered. Why were you conquered means exiled along with the family. You were conquered, you lost. You lost the dice game is the context. And she explains, how did that happen? Rajan, O king, back at the top, paritaya buddhya, due to your wrong thinking. She blames him. Viparita means wrong. Viparita buddhi. Wrong thinking. Viparitya buddhya. O king, due to your wrong thinking, in a, if she spoke American English, you got us in this mess. And she's correct. Who else's fault was it? You can't blame Duryodhana and Shakuni. They're doing what they would always do. So they create these plots. All Yudhishthira had to say was no. He could have said no. He should have said no. He didn't say no. Whose fault was it? Yudhishthira's. Then Draupadi lets him know. It's your fault due to your wrong thinking. Vishame aksha parajaye. When there was the parajaya, defeat. Defeat in the aksha, in this dice game. When there was the defeat in the dice game, and she's not unreasonable. She knows Yudhishthira didn't lose because he wanted to lose. She herself admits it was vishame, aksha parajaye. Vishama means wrong, means disordered. Disordered here means it was a rigged dice game. It was a rigged dice game. And she admits that here. Vishame, in this rigged dice game, there was parajaye, there was this loss that you encountered. But when you lost, asichat nirjitaha, you lost, not only that loss, what did you lose? You lost rajyam, you lost your kingdom. You lost vasuni, all of your wealth. You lost ayudhani, all of your weapons. Not only that, you lost bratran, your brothers. I think it was after, remember there were three dice games. So I think after the second dice game, the brothers were lost. Not only the brothers, mam cha, and you lost me. So as a result of these crooked dice games, you lost everything, O king. And why did you lose everything? Viparitya buddhya, due to your wrong thinking. So what she's saying is your wrong thinking, your prayatna. If you allow me, let's kind of analyze this. I think there's a subtle, some subtle logic going on here. She's not saying it explicitly. Let me bring it out. Prior verse said that his efforts should have yielded good results, but they're not taking place yet. But now in this verse, his effort is giving immediate result. What is that? He lost the dice game, and now they're all they're all exiled in a forest in Barkskin. So she's complaining. She said, Yudhishthira, your good deeds are going to give their results only much later, if at all, but your bad deeds seem to be giving the results immediately. She's complaining about the unfairness of it. And we know people complain a lot about what appears to be unfair. Why me? Common complaint. So she's complaining, why me? O Yudhishthira, all your good actions don't seem to bear any immediate results, but your bad actions, viparita buddhi, your wrong thinking, is yielded this terrible result immediately. Here we are all consigned to the forest. It seems unfair. It's not unfair. A factor we don't know. Ishvara knows. We don't know. The results will come in time. How much time? It depends. And these are laws that we can't directly measure, or we can't predict. This is the problem of the law of karma. Science can tell us a lot about the world that we observe, but that which cannot be observed cannot be studied scientifically. The way in which adrishta karma yields its fruit is something we call it adrishta. Adrishta means unobservable. If it's unobservable, what can science tell us about it? Nothing. So this leads to frustration. She's observing that Yudhishthira, your good actions seem to give immediate results. Your good actions are not giving immediate results. Your bad actions are giving immediate results. She is complaining about what appears to be unfairness, but it's not unfair because sooner or later they will receive the good results. It's not that the good results are withdrawn. It's that they're not coming when she wants them to. And that's the problem. We want the world to work according to our schedule, according to our desires. And it simply doesn't work that way. So she continues. She's on a roll, as they say. Rajor mridor vadhanyasya. Mridor vadhanyasya. Hrimata satya varinaha. Hrimata satya. Katam hakshavyasanaja. Katam hakshavyasana. Buddhira patitatava. Buddhira patitatava. She addresses Yudhishthira in the third line. Katam, how? How, for you, Yudhishthira, you who are, go at the top, mridoho, for you who are mridu. I'm sorry, rajoho, for you who are raju, you are straightforward. You are honest. Mridoho, for you who are mridu, gentle. You are raju, you are straightforward. You are mridu, you are gentle. You are vadanyasya, you are vadanya. Vadanya, friendly. It's like talkative in that sense. You are friendly. You are hrimat. Hrimat means modest. Hrimat. Modest, it means here. It has other meanings, well, modest. And you are satyavadi. You know the meaning of that. You speak truth. Yudhishthira, you are straightforward, you are gentle, you are friendly, you are modest, you speak truth. So if that's all so, katam, how is it that tava buddhihi, in the last line, your mind, apatita, is afflicted. Afflicted with what? Aksha vyasana ja. It has an affliction which is born of vyasana, addiction. Vyasana means addiction here. Addiction to what? Aksha, dice playing. Yudhishthira, you have all these good qualities. For someone like you with all these good qualities, how can you be addicted to dice play? You can see her complaining now because it doesn't fit. Yudhishthira is such a dharmic person. What is his other name? Dharmaputra. Son of, remember his father is Yama? That very, very strange story of how born to Satyavati through Yama. So as such, he's Dharmaputra, the son of Dharma, the most righteous person. He has all these good qualities of gentleness, straightforwardness, being friendly, modest, and truthful. And yet he has this terrible addiction. O Yudhishthira, how can a good person like you be addicted to dice? Happens all the time. Many of you know of a good person who has a real serious problem. They may have a problem with alcohol, they could have a problem with gambling, they have some problem. They're a really good, solid person, but then they have one huge flaw. In this case, addiction to gambling. How do we explain that? It's all up on the board. And that is Daiva. What is it that determines the qualities with which we're born? Isn't it true that most of the qualities you have are the result of your birth? Now, when I say the result of your birth, not in a purely genetic way, but being born into your family at that place and time, highly conditioned who you are. We could say that your values are mostly determined by the conditions of your birth. Daiva, right? The conditions of your birth determine most of your qualities. That is daiva. But that daiva Daiva, remember, means, as we're using it as a synonym here for prarabdha karmas. Prarabdha karmas means the karmas from past lives that determine this life, the karmas you were born with in this life. The karmas you were born with, are they all good karmas? They're not all good karmas. Many good karmas, because you're a good person, you're from a good family. So many good karmas, but none of us are born without papa karmas. Every human being is born with a combination of punya and papa karmas. This is one of the fundamental teachings of the doctrine of karma. All of us, every single human being is born with both punya karma and papa karma from past lives. That's called daiva here, or prarabdha karma. The good karmas you're born with guarantee that good things will happen to you in this life that you don't deserve based on your actions in this life. The papa karmas with which you're born guarantee that you'll undergo suffering that you don't deserve based on your actions in this life. You get it? That this life is really, really crucial. Because of your past good karmas, you have some blessings in this life. Because of your past papa karmas, you're going to undergo some suffering in this life. Every single person has both. Therefore, none of us can say, why me? If you say, I'm a good person, why is this terrible thing happening to me? It's because terrible things happen to every good person. There is not a good person alive or who has ever lived that didn't have suffering in their life due to past karmas. Therefore, you've heard me say many times, instead of saying, why me, we have to say, why not me? Am I special somehow that I should be exempted from this bad karma? Everyone else is subject to this bad karma. So, to finish up this verse, Yudhishthira, because of his past good deeds, was born with so many qualities. But being born as a human being means you have both punya and papa karmas. His past punya karmas gave him all these wonderful qualities, and his past papa karma results in akshavyasana, addiction to dice play. And we see this in life. Every great person has flaws. And every evil, if I can use that word, every evil person has a few good qualities. Both are true, and the doctrine of karma helps us open up our minds to see that reality. Okay, this is a good place to stop. We'll continue in our next class. We have a lot of interesting material that we'll see. Some important announcements. Tomorrow, Sunday, we have our program for children at 11 o'clock. At 5 p.m., we will not have the mindful awareness meditation. But at 6:15 on the first Sunday of each month, we're doing advanced meditation. So tomorrow at 6:15, advanced meditation means Nididhyasana, Vedantic contemplation. So we'll conduct that session tomorrow at 6:15. I should have mentioned that in the meditation class. I forgot. Two other announcements. We announced before that we are scheduling a residential retreat that I will conduct at Arsha Vidya Gurukulam in Salisbury in the Poconos. That retreat will be August 7 through 12, and the reason I'm mentioning it to you now is registration is open now. So if you want to register, and by the way, I encourage you to register early because they do have limited accommodation. So register early. Call them up. Their website is arshavidya.org. You can go ahead and register for that retreat. Also, I'm supposed to remind you, if you are attending classes regularly, you're supposed to give a regular donation. We hope you give something monthly. I think most of you are doing that. Finally, library will be open after class. We'll conclude their prayers.